Today on Inside Utah Politics, House Speaker Mike Schultz joins the show. We tackle his top priorities in the days we've got left. And should Utahns show ID when they turn in their mail-in ballots? Our panel assesses the big ideas to reform Utah's elections. And Utah is racing into the future. We walk through the agreement promising flying taxis before the Olympics return in 2034.
You're listening to Inside Utah Politics with Lindsay Ehrts.
Thank you for joining us. I'm Lindsay Ehrts. Let's go Inside Utah Politics. And we've taken the show on the road to the Utah State Capitol today for the 2025 legislative session. We're meeting lawmakers where they are to bring you the developments and analysis from the room where it happened. Now, this week, we got the chance to sit down with another member of legislative leadership, House Speaker Mike Schultz, for a conversation about his priorities this year and some of the hot button issues. Speaker, it's good to be with you. Let's start with elections. A big proposal coming out of the House would make it so you have to, everyone would get mailed a ballot, but then you want people to have to show ID just and bring their mail-in ballots back in. Some are calling this proposal really just not feasible, but talk to me why it's so important for you.
Yeah, well, I think for several reasons why it's important. Let me start out with what makes Utah great, right? So I brought a little card with me. It has 10 of the top ranking, 10 of the number one accolades that the state of Utah has received over this year. Number one state overall, one of the very best education systems in the nation. We are number one and we lead the nation on so many fronts. But an area where we lag behind is in our securing our elections. We rank in the bottom third of states when it comes to securing our elections. So HB 300 is a bill that Representative Burton is running that I'm very supportive of and pushing. And it's important because it preserves the things that citizens like most about our voting processes, and that they can get their ballot in their homes, and then they can sit around the kitchen tables, decide what, do their research, decide which candidates to vote for, what issues to vote on, and just go through that process in their own home, determining what they feel is best. But where it changes it is instead of mailing it in, you then have, like, let's say 5 to 10 days, we'll see where it lands, but you have that time to then go take that ballot and drop it off at a drop box where you show ID to drop that off. And that's what citizens show that the number one thing that we can do to secure our elections.
How does it not defeat the purpose of voting by mail? I know there's a provision in there where you can opt in to return your ballot by mail. But if you can't just do it automatically, does it not just defeat the purpose of vote by mail?
No, I don't think so. Because again, the thing that I hear the most people like about the vote by mail is getting that ballot at home and be able to sit around their kitchen tables and decide which candidate to vote for and do their research. And so it still preserves the very best part. And then it gives you 5 to 10 days, we'll see where it lands, to then go take that ballot and show your ID. 81% of Americans feel that we need to show ID when we vote. I think it's the number one thing that we can do to secure our elections and move us up and put us in the top tiers of being one of the most secure states in the nation for our elections.
The Senate has signaled they're not super on board with your idea to have to bring it back in. And it's not so much the showing ID. They fundamentally agree with that, right? So the issue is, how do we do that and at what point in the process?
Yeah, and that's the thing that most people agree with, right? They want to show ID. They think you should have to show ID. But the question then becomes, how do you make that happen? And that's the question we're going to be working through and wrestling with the Senate. We look forward to those conversations. There are some things that we need to work out. We're working those out, and we'll see what happens at the end of the day.
I think your issues are kind of, though, with the voter rolls in particular, right? You want those cleaner. You want it so people can't get ballots who are dead, right? And that's a voter roll issue. So why not target kind of the voter rolls, fixing those, and likewise making signature verification more robust if that's really the issue?
Yeah, well, it gets a little more in detail than that. But if you make the signature process, verification process more robust, you're going to reject a whole bunch more ballots, like a significant amount of ballots. And so at that point in time, then you have to go through the cure process, which then delays the results of getting the election results in a timely manner. And so this process solves that. You'll be able to have election results on election night. And again, I don't think it's that big a deal. Most people drop their ballots off at drop boxes anyways. And so to show ID at the time you drop the ballot off, I think, is important.
want to move on to tax cuts, because this is an issue everyone's on pins and needles for. How much money am I going to save every year?
Yeah.
Where do things sit right now with the potential of cutting the Social Security tax for seniors, and then also an income tax cut?
So we've actually talked about it with our caucus, and we would like to do both. And we'd like to add a third option into there, and a tax credit for families, expand the tax credit for families with kids. We want every Utahn to have a tax cut, not just our seniors. So what we're talking about from the House is, let's again take another step on Social Security, so that 80 to 85% of people on Social Security don't have to pay any Social Security taxes. That's something that we strongly feel is important. But we also feel like once you get into that higher income tax brackets, that you could probably go ahead and still continue to pay some Social Security tax, because we want to take that money that would go to the top earners and give it to all Utahns.
So you're sort of signaling it wouldn't just be a broad Social Security tax cut.
Yeah, that's not the House's position. The House's position is we want to do all three. We want to cut Social Security taxes again. We want to cut everybody's income taxes. And then we want to increase the tax credit for families.
If we eventually bring the income tax down to zero, how do we replace that funding stream?
Well, it's a debate that, that will continue to happen. And so we're fortunate here in Utah. We have a growing economy. We have a very productive economy. And we can right now just ratchet it down without increasing it. It's important to note that this will be the fifth year that we've lowered taxes in the state of Utah. And cumulatively, it is a 10% cut on people's income taxes. That starts to add up. It's a significant number at the end of the day.
I understand you have an education bill coming forward. Talk to me about it.
So I feel like, education is super important to all my constituents, right? But I feel like, and the numbers show this as well, that CTE, career technical education, really has been left out of public education and hasn't had a lot of investment into it over the last two or three decades. And we're starting to see the impacts of that in our society right now. And so the decision's been made to put those resources into other areas. So we wanna bring resources back into our K-12, specifically our high schools, so that they can focus on career technical education. I get the opportunity to go visit high schools and schools all over the state. I had the opportunity to go visit Davis Catalyst Center in Davis School District. It is unbelievable. It's a CTE high school, and we had, I talked to two computer science graduates that were walking out of high school making $80,000 a year. We want to expand that all across the state.
Yeah, lots of education proposals, so we'll have to keep an eye on that one. But it's kind of a trope here on Capitol Hill, when the speaker or the president run a bill, you back it. So
we'll see. That's because we have good ideas, right?
Totally. I'm assuming that one's going to make it through. Let me switch to a little more controversial topic, and that is this issue of transgender students in university dorms. The House passed a bill this week. It's waiting for a Senate vote restricting which transgender students can use which housing. If you don't mind, I want you to watch this clip from one of your Democratic House members, Sahara Hayes, and her kind of plea to the body.
Yeah. I have to tell you, the LGBTQ community is so tired. We are so tired of being scared every year when this body meets, because we don't know how we're going to be targeted. We don't know how our loved ones and our families are going to be targeted.
How do you feel when you watch that? I mean, is this group being targeted?
Well, I don't think so. Look, it's a tough issue, right? Because there's both sides of the issue. Certainly we feel for those kids, the trans kids. But we also need to look and say, okay, female spaces are for female spaces. And when you have biological males moving into the same rooms as biological females, that creates a problem. And so what that bill did is it says biological female dorms are for biological females, biological males are for biological males. You can't intermix the two. So, but what it also does is it creates an opportunity for additional or for housing for those students that necessarily may not care, and create that space. So I think that we are being sensitive to those needs, because we're still providing places for those kids to live in a setting that everybody feels comfortable for. I have kids I have four daughters. I can't imagine having to put them through that. I think it's something that majority of Utahns agree with, but also we need to be sensitive to the other side, and I feel like this bill did that and found that space.
We're going to have to leave that topic there, but in our last 30 seconds, Utah now has a plan to help co-manage our national parks. Yeah. Tell me about this and how it would work out.
Well, we think it's great because it helps save the federal government money, and the thing that we're frustrated with is the federal government isn't taking care of our national parks. There's over $11 billion, I think was what Representative Elin said, in deferred maintenance in our national parks. We can do better. We want to take care of our lands. We want to take care of our landscapes. If we can have the opportunity to help manage those, we will do it better, and there will be more opportunities for Utahns.
Very interesting. We'll watch for that. House Speaker Mike Schultz, thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you.
My thanks again to House Speaker Mike Schultz there. Now, still ahead on Inside Utah Politics, we recap the top headlines from week two at the legislative session. Our panel weighs in on the biggest policy changes being eyed by the Utah legislature.
You're listening to Inside Utah Politics with Lindsay Ehrens.
I want to welcome in my panel now. Joining me, two experts here on Utah's Capitol Hill. They're deep involved in policy. Taylor Morgan with Morgan & May Public Affairs, a government relations firm, Public Affairs, and Adam Gardner with ASG Consulting. Gentlemen, thank you for joining me.
Good to be here.
Okay, gonna dive right into the headlines of week two. There was a lot happening on Utah's Capitol Hill. First of all, just the end of last week, we saw this public sector union bill usher in a compromise. The Senate decided not to vote it on Friday, at least, to give people time to kind of look at this compromise bill. So essentially what the compromise says is if 50% plus one of the public employees vote to collectively bargain, then the unions are allowed to essentially collectively bargain. And the compromise came in order, it's just that, a compromise, right? Do you feel like the public labor unions won with this? Some are not opposing. Is everyone on board? Where do you see this?
My opinion, I think this is a clear win for the public sector labor unions. I also think that it demonstrates a sincere interest and commitment by the sponsor, Representative Jordan Tusher. He has been criticized for this bill in its original form, yet he's been on the record and he's been clear that his intent here is to look out for public employees like teachers and firefighters and police officers. I think this latest compromise does demonstrate his commitment to representing them and trying to work for their best interest. This compromise bill now is up in the Senate. We'll see what happens there. I do think it's a win for these unions.
Adam, can you drill into why collective bargaining was such an issue for the legislature?
You know, I think that it seemed by some that he was targeting the teachers' unions. And so whenever you target one particular group, you're going to make a lot of people very mad. And teachers, when they are organized and collective, mm-hmm. I guess I should say, mm-hmm. when they come up to the Hill, they're a force. They write emails. They let parents know. So it's a big deal when you're just targeting one group of people. But when you're targeting public sector and you're just looking at teachers, then you wrap in firefighters and you wrap in police officers. And those are constituencies, all three of them, that the general public, even though they don't know a ton about the issue, they're very involved in helping our first responders and those educating our kids. So that's why it becomes such a hot topic on Capitol Hill.
And I will say a lot of credit to the firefighters, the police officers, these other public unions for being up here. I was just outside the Senate in the House chambers, and the halls are full of firefighters and police officers and teachers. It's easy for Utah legislators to often go after the National Education Association, but when police officers and firefighters become involved politically, it becomes very different.
They have much better parking than us, too, when
right?
they show up at the Capitol as
yeah.
in their police cars.
Yeah, it's so true. Everyone yields to them for yes. some reason. Do you see this bill as being targeting? I know the UEA has taken issue with some of the legislature's moves, and they had Amendment A pulled from the ballot. Well, they didn't, but they were sort of, you know, involved in the lawsuit, and the sponsor of the bill accused of targeting at least that public sector union. Do you see it that way?
I don't see it that way.
No.
And that's because Representative Tusher also sponsored legislation last year before the UEA-NEA lawsuit on unions, on these public unions. It's an issue that he has been working on for years, and I don't see this year's bill as any kind of a target or a punishment by Representative Tusher.
But one issue that came up in the committee, Adam, was Senator Brammer, I think, brought up that some unions, whether they're from the national or even our local unions, were too political. Do you agree with that?
I 100% agree with that. It's hard for a conservative state like Utah, who looks to the national level and sees national unions focusing more on left-leaning or Democratic politics. There's going to be some pushback from Republican state legislators. You just have to accept that. And so what they have to do in Utah is decide how far that they can push the legislature. Of course, there's going to be things on which you disagree with the legislature and you have to fight for those. But when you push too hard, the legislature is going to push back. We've seen time and time again where they're not going to just sit there and let it happen and let them be, I don't want to say defamed or degraded, or, but when you go after the legislature, they're going to fight back.
Now, another issue where we see they may be taking some revenge, and to be fair, they deny it, right, but is in the initiative space, right? We've seen the Supreme Court come and kind of curb the initiative process in Utah. Taylor, I know you're deep in the election space in Utah, so walk us through the proposals to change the initiative process on Utah's Capitol Hill.
An issue, a topic that's definitely near and dear to my heart. I have run two statewide initiatives here in Utah. I know that process in and out. And so I'm tracking, you know, these bills really closely. The bill in its present form right now would require the sponsors of a citizen statewide initiative to identify in the initiative how much it would cost. That's already part of it. Yet the new bill would require them to choose where in the current state budget funding for their initiative would come from. And the argument by legislators is a credible one, I think, and their argument is that constitutionally they have to balance their budget every year, and shouldn't initiative sponsors also have to balance the state budget in effect as well?
Do they have to show where their funding comes from for a law?
Exactly right. They have to choose in the initiative where funding for it would come from. So essentially it's where, if you're going to pay for this initiative, the money has to come from somewhere, right? So
yeah,
it requires sponsors to make that decision.
Another proposal in the initiative space, Adam, is to change Utah's constitution and ask voters in the 2026 election whether initiatives dealing with taxes should have a 60% approval threshold from voters instead of just a majority at 50%. Is that too high of a burden?
It's not too high. I don't like initiatives, and so I love that when we make it just a little bit harder. But to what Taylor was saying, I think it's really important during 2018, when you have Medicaid expansion on the ballot. I remember my wife, somebody knocked on the door, she opens it, and I heard, I didn't see this person say this, but I heard, hey, we're trying to give kids medical care. And my wife says, oh, I'll sign that. That's not what it did. And if we, when we passed it, it would have increased our budget 22%. That would have not been sustainable. So the legislature is tasked with figuring out how to pay for this expansion, and it's a nightmare. So when you're dealing with funds, you're dealing with money, I think it's important that that threshold is really high. 60%, I think, is high on the low end.
Now, can I add one important piece to this conversation? And that is, I think, an unintended consequence of the legislation in process right now, that the legislation would apply the constitutional requirement that's currently in the Utah Constitution for only ballot amendments initiated by the legislature. That is one of the reasons Amendment D and Amendment A were voided by the state Supreme Court. There is legislation, part of a package with initiatives, that would apply the same notification requirement to statewide initiatives and referenda, and the legislature's own fiscal analyst has determined that could cost $1.4 million for a statewide initiative. That's a new cost. In both initiatives I ran, that cost was between $3,000 to $10,000 at most. A $1.4 million price tag on initiatives in the state is a real problem, and that could be something that prompts the state Supreme Court to perhaps get involved and say that the legislature now is going too far when it comes to the voters' right of initiative.
We'll definitely keep an eye on that. Our time is short, so I want to switch to stay on the topic of elections, because we've seen a big proposal come out of the House. This proposal is send everyone a mail-in ballot and then require people to take their mail-in ballot back to a Dropbox or in person and show ID. Adam, let me start with you. Good idea or not?
I'm a huge proponent of showing your ID. I hope we can do that when people actually go register to vote, that we lock that process down. What my concern with this bill is, I love the concept, but it's really hard to enforce. So you can no longer drop it off at a post office anymore. You can still go to a Dropbox, but county clerks are gonna have to figure out how to staff every single Dropbox, in Salt Lake County, I can picture what a nightmare that would be. And are you only there during the day? I like dropping it off on my way home from work at 7 o'clock at night. No one will be there. Is it locked up? I don't know the logistics well enough to see this really being a success. My worry is that people love vote by mail, and does this unintended consequence get rid of vote by mail? I hope that doesn't happen.
And Taylor, we know that the Senate is not quite on board with this House plan. They may come up with their own version. If showing ID is the issue for the legislature, what is the right point in the process to show ID if we vote by mail?
It's a good question. Adam makes a great point. ID is part of the process when you register to vote in the first place. I don't think it's a terrible idea to add ID to, say, the secure covered portion of the return envelope with vote by mail. That's an option that senators are looking at to forge a compromise. I think the starting point with what we see in the original vote by mail bill, House Bill 300, is it is a solution in search of a problem in its current form. I do not think it has support in the Senate. We'll hopefully see a compromise.
We're going to have to leave it there. Taylor Morgan, Adam Gardner, thank you so much for being my panel today.
Thank you.
Coming up, the future of air travel. Maybe we take a look at the flying taxis. Utah leaders hope to see fill the skies by 2034. Welcome back to Inside Utah Politics. I'm Lindsay Ertz. This week's devastating plane crash in D.C. understandably has many of us on edge and leery about taking to the skies. But this week, Utah took a big step towards making air taxis a reality. Now, I caught up with top experts in the aerospace and defense industry here in Utah as they usher in what they're calling the future of the state's transportation system.
The stroke of a pen ushered in advanced air mobility in Utah. A company called Beta Technologies, with the backing of the governor, partnering with Utah-based 47G, Utah's premier aerospace and defense industry group. Beta Technologies is bringing their electric planes that take off vertically to Utah.
We're bringing airplanes out very shortly to start flying routes here. We put charging into the airports, hopefully later this fall, early next year.
The planes run on these very small rechargeable batteries. The CEO and president of 47G, Aaron Starks, tells me that over the next 12 months, five Utah airports will get charging stations. The flights will start carrying cargo, then medical supplies, but over the next decade, these planes could be buzzing between Olympic venues.
The FAA said, hey, this is the first realistic time frame we've ever seen from a state. So come Olympics 2034, it's game time. We want these on full display. We want people moving around. We want packages being delivered.
UDOT is in charge of managing air mobility, just like they manage Utah's roads. So one obvious question, roads have traffic rules. So how would it work in the sky?
And that's something that we're working on right now. I mean, and we're working with the FAA on this because there will be, for lack of a better term, and the industry doesn't like to use it, but highways in the skies. And these aircraft, initially when they start flying passengers, the FAA has come out and said already that there will be pilots on board, just like our conventional aircraft. They will be talking to air traffic control. Air traffic control will be guiding them, directing them, and things like that.
Eventually, these planes will be able to fly on their own. And UDOT's Matt Moss says eventually computers will help there. But there's also questions about how much taxpayers could be on the hook for building their landing areas called vertiports.
A vertiport doesn't have to be a massive infrastructure thing. At hospitals, sometimes a vertiport is just a line painted in a parking lot with a charger in it. We've done that.
I also asked Beta's CEO about another obvious concern, safety.
There's an exceptionally high safety bar that the FAA sets, that the community sets, and that we set as a company. Look, I'm a pilot, my kids are pilots, they love flying. I'm not going to put my family in something unless it is super safe and reliable.
Despite the fact that there's still a lot to figure out, these leaders say air taxis are Utah's future.
This is historic for one key reason. It puts us at the top of the list worldwide for air mobility. There is no other state that will have a plan in place and a strategy to adopt this technology and have it operable within the time frame that we will.
It's exciting. It's like the forward-leaning approach that Utah has taken will establish itself today and in the future as the aerospace leading state. It's amazing.
Well, that does it today for Inside Utah Politics. Don't forget, if you have any local political stories you'd like to see us cover, make sure to reach out. You can email insideutahpolitics@abc4.com. You can also follow along with me on social media, on X, on Blue Sky, and Threads. Just search for Lindsay on Air, Lindsay spelled with an A. And you can also find ABC4 on social media to follow along no matter where you are. And while you're at it, download the ABC4 News app. We're always on. And of course, this show lives in podcast form. Just search for Inside Utah Politics with Lindsay Ertz wherever you podcast. Thanks for being with us today. We'll see you next week.